Hello?
Sunny?
Yes. Okay. I think I'm...
Yeah. I'm here.
We're good.
Okay. So let's see. I pressed star 9, and it gave me something different then.
We're also being recorded now.
Oh, we are?
Yes.
Okay. All right. Great. So I'll go ahead and get started. Hi, everyone. I'm Sunny Dutra. I'll be the moderator for the call-in presentation today, and I'm very happy to welcome you to tonight's presentation with Shauna Dowden, who is an expert in the treatment of BPD with extensive clinical experience in dialectical behavior therapy, DBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, and mentalization-based treatment, or MBT. We are extremely fortunate to have her presenting this evening on the similarities and differences between DBT and MBT. Before we begin, I'll cover a couple of administrative details, and then I'll introduce Dr. Dowden, and then she'll get started with her presentation. If you're registered for the call-in series, you should have the slides. If you haven't received them, unfortunately, due to some technical issues, we won't be able to send them out tonight, but we will get them posted on the website right away. If you need to register for the series, you can email neabpdcalls@aol.com, and we'll get you registered right away. We'd like to acknowledge the Gunderson residents at McLean Hospital and the Clearview Treatment Programs who are generously helping to sponsor this program. If you'd like to make a contribution to NEA-BPD to support the production and archives of these calls, you can do so by clicking on the link in the weekly email or going to the Donate tab on the NEA-BPD website at www.borderlinepersonalitydisorder.com. Once we get started with the presentation, you can email in any questions along the way or at the end by sending them to neabpdcalls@aol.com. If there are any questions, I can go ahead and jump in along the way, and Dr. Dowden will be happy to answer your questions during or at the end of the presentation. We will plan to finish promptly at 9 p.m., and the audio and slides from the call will be archived at www.borderlinepersonalitydisorder.com. So please feel free to pass that information on to people in your network. Now, I am delighted to introduce Dr. Shauna Dowden, a master clinician with an extremely high level of training and a great deal of experience and expertise in DBT and mentalization-based treatment. Dr. Dowden received her PhD in clinical psychology in 2001 from the University of Connecticut and completed her pre- and postdoctoral training at McLean Hospital and Harvard Medical School. She was intensively trained in DBT with Marsha Linehan in 2002. Currently, Dr. Dowden is an instructor in psychology in the Department of Psychiatry at Harvard Medical School, a consultant at the Gunderson Residence, which is a residential treatment program for women with BPD, as well as maintains a full-time private practice specializing in BPD, chronic depression, bipolar illness, and PTSD. She has also been practicing mindfulness herself for over 2 decades and integrates this practice into all aspects of her work with a particular focus on willingness for change, interpersonal awareness, and contentment. We are extremely fortunate to hear from her this evening on the similarities and differences between DBT and MBT. And with that, I will hand it over to you.
Thank you very much. That was great. I was actually going to start with sort of saying a little bit about who I am, and I'll do a piece of that because I think it will set that frame for how I think about these two treatments. I think about this a little bit in terms of a disclaimer even. So I have the benefit of working really closely with some amazing researchers and academics. And just actually this weekend was at a conference with Peter Fonagy for the last 2 days. And what I find with folks who are really deep into the research and the academic and the theoretical component of it is that there are lots of ways in which they make really fine distinctions between things, which is really important in terms of advancing our knowledge base. But when you come at it from the perspective of a clinician and you're wondering, well, what the heck do I do in the room with this person that I'm sitting with right now, sometimes those distinctions fall away. I think, as I go through the similarities and the differences, I think you'll hear some that I really will point out as these are very different, and if I'm thinking from my DBT hat, I'm going to do something different, and if I'm thinking from my MBT hat, I'm going to think something different and do something different, but there's actually a lot of overlap between the two treatments as well. And personally, my bias tends to be to find similarities rather than differences. So you'll just kind of keep that in mind as you're listening. And one last point around that is that our research base right now is really solid, but it can't actually answer the question yet about whether what's different about these treatments is what makes each of them effective, or is it that there's some common piece between the two treatments and that's what makes them effective? And if that even that sort of point seems too fine a point to follow, you can just throw it out the window. So I thought I would start with the things that I see as similar, and then we can move on to the differences. So both treatments were developed out of the set of researchers, Marsha Linehan on the one hand in the United States and Anthony Bateman and Peter Fonagy over in the UK, having this set of patients who we later understood as having BPD or real difficulty with self-harm and suicidality, that they were not responding to treatment in the way that folks wanted them to or expected them to, and rather than, as was the case at the time, blaming the clients, they actually thought about trying to find a way to reach these folks. So one of the ways that they are very similar is they both sought to reduce the stigma around this particular disorder. They're both really heavily focused on psychoeducation and talking to people in a very respectful way about what they're dealing with. And I think about it in terms of treatment transparency. So there's really nothing that we're doing that's secret or behind the scenes, or we're not just very open about across both treatments. The other thing is that their dose is very similar, meaning they both, at the get-go, require one individual session and one group session a week. And I'll say more about what each of the groups and individual work looks like. But it's a pretty pared-down treatment for both of these treatments, which is great news. The other thing, and I actually think that this is one of the most significant pieces that makes both of these treatments effective, is the support that they offer the therapist. So prior to these treatments being out there in the world, people were often struggling with these particular clients on their own, not knowing what to do, blaming themselves, blaming the client, and not getting a lot of support. Both of these treatments have really extensive treatment manuals, so there's a guideline for what you do when, which is always helpful and supportive. The other piece is that there are weekly consultation teams that are different than weekly rounds or staff meetings where the focus is what might be going on with the client. Here, these consultation teams are really about what's going on with the therapist. How is the therapist thinking or behaving or feeling towards the client in a way that might be interfering with the treatment, and how do we support each other to get out of that space so that the treatment can move along in a more effective way. It's also interesting to note that they both rely heavily on videotapes and training the clinicians. And having done a lot of work in training clinicians, and I'll say even in training myself in terms of thinking what I'm doing in the room with someone, sometimes when I leave a session and if I think about what's happened and then I go and watch the videotape about what's happened, they can be different. So both of these come at training clinicians by actually watching what's happening in the room, which I think gives them a lot of power. If we move on, and I'm still on what makes them similar, the stance that the therapist takes in the room is very active. Therapists in both treatment models are very inquisitive. They have particularly different focuses for their questions, but they're very engaged. So this is not your traditional therapist where you come in and you sit down and you talk and talk and talk, and maybe they ask a question here or there, give a little bit of feedback here or there. These therapists are talking sometimes as much as the client, actually. They're really in the room. Which moves to another point in which the treatments overlap in terms of therapist style, is that you as a therapist are authentically present. There are times that you might self-disclose, and we say that this is purposeful self-disclosure, not that you're talking about your difficulties or, you know, how your day is going, but there's ways in which you bring in your own experiences into the room. That's very different from how treatment is conducted in other kinds of treatments or how it was conducted with these folks long ago, and that without this kind of authentic presence, people with BPD often really struggle to stay connected. And we know that if people aren't connected to their therapist, the treatment will fall apart no matter how good the technique or the theory is around it. Similarly, and along those lines, both treatments really hold focusing on the therapy relationship is very important. And they come at it in different ways, but when there's something that goes wrong within the therapy relationship, both of them come at trying to sort that out as one of the major tasks of treatment, and that it gets sorted out in a way in which the client and the therapist are equal. They're on the same level, so that it's not that, of course, it's the client's fault that we've run into some difficulty, but it may be that, in fact, somehow the therapist is to blame, and that we're taught to be very humble, open about our failings, and non-defensive. And in some ways, I wondered if, you know, if we stopped there, that may be, again, the common factors of both these treatments that make them effective. But I'll go on to talk about how they're different. So, and the way that I thought about doing this, but you'll interrupt me if it feels like it's a little bit too complicated, is that I'll go a little bit back and forth between this is how DBT approaches things, this is how MBT approaches things. So first I'll talk about where they originated out of, how they think of the core problem in BPD, and then what this means in terms of what you do in the room. So in terms of thinking about how DBT and MBT developed, DBT came out of a behavioral treatment model, which means it's very focused on the things that we can see. So what actual behaviors can we observe? And it certainly takes into consideration feelings and thoughts, but it comes at it from a perspective of how can we observe these things. Everything is in our awareness or can be brought to our awareness, so there's no unconscious that we have to worry about. And much of what we do, the behaviors that we engage in, come from how we've learned to engage in behaviors. And so there are things in the environment or things within ourselves that reinforce behaviors or make them more likely to occur or give rise to them, and they're all based on reinforcements and contingencies. So it's a learning behavioral treatment model. That's where it developed. And for folks who maybe don't know a whole lot about different kinds of theoretical models, the basic learning principles you probably have heard about in terms of Pavlov's dogs. And if you ring a bell, those dogs somehow learn to salivate because the ringing of the bell and the feeding of the dogs got paired. And anyone who has a dog knows this is true. This is true, right? Once you start walking over to where the leash is, that dog knows he's going out. So that's sort of basic learning principles. And the idea is that you can then apply these to things like self-harm or drinking too much or functional behaviors, getting to work on time, that all of what we do is then reinforced somehow or other. Now, what Marcia did that's really, I think, you know, an important piece for why this works, because if we were just applying this, and there were certainly a lot of people trying to apply this, these sorts of learning principles to people with BPD, is it can fall flat unless it takes in how actually complicated the world is, how complicated the things that these folks struggle with. So she added in this other piece, which is mindfulness, Eastern philosophy. So there's a layer of complexity added on top of the learning principles. And in a real nutshell, what this is a way of looking at life that includes acceptance, sees us all as interconnected, that seeks balance and synthesis. And I can go on to say more about that as we move along. So that's the origin of DBT. I'll also say she's got a really extensive treatment manual and a separate skills manual. It takes many hours to get trained in DBT. And this is something that's really like, people typically are very skilled clinicians even before they take on getting trained in DBT, and then it takes lots and lots and lots of hours and time to get trained. Because of all the components, her treatment manual is really extensive. I think of it in kind of an orchestra sort of a way. So if you think about an orchestra and all of the different pieces, all of the different instruments and how they all come together to play a symphony. I can't say that word. On the other hand, I think of MBT a sort of a jazz band, and I'll say more about where it originated, but that there are a lot less instruments, there's a lot more improvisation. And Marcia would say there's jazz and improvisation in DBT as well, but just to give you an idea about kind of how structured DBT versus MBT is. So MBT originated out of a psychodynamic treatment model, and most people are sort of somewhat familiar with Freud and the idea of the unconscious. He certainly was very active, you know, almost 100 years ago. So the dynamic models have changed a lot since then, but the basic ideas that our very early relationships with important people, whether it's our mothers or our fathers or our grandparents, but that our core caregivers shape the way that we think about or relate to ourselves, the way that we relate to our emotional lives, the way that we relate to other people. And so dynamic treatment models try and understand how that evolves. And they have different ways of understanding it. The more modern psychodynamic treatments are not like the stereotypical we spend our entire time talking about mother or father going back into childhood, but that we just rather understand how people arrive in adulthood as they are based on those early relationships. And rather than thinking about things in terms of skills or behaviors, we think about things in terms of capacities or deficits in how we are and how we function. So, if we think about those different origins, they sort of start to set us up for what we might be doing in treatment and how we might think about the core problem. So again, DBT is a learning model, and MBT is a psychodynamic or a relationship model. So DBT views the core problem for folks with BPD as being one around a skills deficit and a particular kind of skills deficit. So they view the core challenge that arose is sort of ends up being called emotion dysregulation. And emotion dysregulation means having strong emotions, feeling things very profoundly, but having very little effective ways of coping with those profound, painful experiences. Because it's a learning model, what Marcia suggested is that this result, this emotional dysregulation problem, results from not having learned in childhood really how to regulate your emotions in a helpful and effective way, and that this arose from coming into the world with a temperament that's sensitive, meaning that things are felt more strongly from the get-go. And we, you know, anyone who has seen, been around a family with two kids, same parents, kids come into the world kind of different. So sensitive kids are ones that actually notice things like temperature changes. And then when they notice them, they actually feel something very strongly about it. And then the next phase is they can be very difficult to soothe. So it takes a long time for that emotion to settle back down. So that sets them up to be in a vulnerable spot where if the environment is not one that's extremely skilled at managing this kind of temperament, it can be experienced as invalidating. And so the child then experiences more and more negative emotions, and there's this negative feedback loop that gets started. So, again, emotion dysregulation is seen as the core problem, and that's when a strong emotion and an inability to regulate those emotions. MBT, on the other hand, and I will say on the other hand, although it might start to sound very similar, views the core problem as what it calls unstable mentalizing. And I'll define mentalizing in a little bit. But unstable mentalizing means the inability to stay reflectively, thoughtfully engaged with yourself about your emotions, about your thoughts, about what's going on within yourself, and similarly not to be able to stay reflectively engaged in what's going on in your relationships. They also see this as a problem that arose out of childhood. Rather than seeing it as a skills deficit, they see that the capacity to stay in a good, solid, mentalizing, thoughtful space over time didn't develop, and it didn't develop similarly. They talk about kids coming into the world with what they call a temperamental vulnerability, but a similar style of being sensitive and feeling things more strongly. And then having something that happens in the world that they would call an attachment trauma or an attachment challenge, so that the relationships that they were in early on did not help to support their developing this capacity to mentalize. So emotion dysregulation on the one hand, unstable mentalizing on the other, both arising out of childhood challenges. What I will say is they both, what is the outcome? If you're someone who has emotion dysregulation or you're someone who struggles with unstable mentalizing, both treatments will talk about how this leads to having lots of painful, unmanageable experiences of emotion, which of course will then affect relationships in a way in which they're challenged or strained. They both give rise to what we think about as chaotic or destructive behaviors, and actually both treatments view all behaviors, whether in the end they're destructive intentionally or not, but they're all attempts to manage these very strong and painful emotional experiences, whether to numb them or minimize them or distract from the pain. But even self-harm is seen in both treatments as really an attempt to manage very difficult feelings. Relationships get strained because, on the one hand, if someone's feeling a whole lot of feelings, that adds a level of turmoil, potentially, to relationships. But it's also that slights are felt more extremely and more often. Trust becomes very hard to build, and relationships are not, at the sort of basic core, seen as safe and pleasant often. This is not 100% of the time, or in all relationships for everybody, but most relationships are complicated. Attention and concentration then becomes really difficult. And this is something that some treatments will talk about and some won't, but it gets very difficult to actually do the things that make life more functional or worthwhile, like getting to work, if you're in constant emotional pain. So, while they see the problem as originating from slightly different or very different things, depending on whether you're me or you're them, what the end result is very similar. That said, what we do in treatment is different. So our focus in DBT is really around active teaching of skills. So emotion dysregulation is seen as a skills deficit. So we do a lot of active teaching of skills and then figuring out how to reinforce more effective or adaptive behaviors. The skills that are taught are emotion regulation skills, interpersonal effectiveness skills, distress tolerance skills, mindfulness skills. Within each of those four major categories, there are a whole bunch of skills that are taught, and you'll get the sense of why I call this an orchestra. And then the individual therapy works to sort out what is it in the person's life that's reinforcing destructive behaviors and how can we actually reinforce more adaptive behaviors. It's not, as much as we say teaching, it can sound like it's a class. It's not so much a class, but it is really aimed at teaching. So the individual therapy does a lot of identifying problems and thinking about how you would solve them differently. On the other hand, MBT does not talk at all about teaching. It's more, I would say, in the last year or so, as I've continued to hear Anthony and Peter talk about it, they've started to shift in terms of thinking this is sort of a skill that we're teaching, but really at its core they think of it as a capacity, more like maintaining your balance while riding a bike, that you can set things up so that someone is more likely to be able to maintain their balance while they're riding a bike, but you're not so much teaching them the skill of riding a bike. And the way in which the therapy addresses developing this capacity more is the way in which the individual therapy and the client relationship unfolds, and the particular things that they focus on and how they talk about it. But it's really seen that the therapy is this thing that sort of strengthens this muscle, and then that generalizes when the person is out in the world. It may make sense for me to do a little bit about what mentalizing actually means. So mentalizing, when we talk about this mentalizing capacity, it is the ability to, it's something we all do, which is when we view somebody, their behavior or their nonverbals as meaningful, meaning that there's something that they're expressing that comes from some mental states. And mental states is a sophisticated way of saying thoughts, feelings, beliefs that they have. So when you get home at the end of the day and you walk through the door and you see your spouse, just by looking at them, many people can sort of say, oh, they've had a good day or they've had a bad day. They're in a good mood or they're in a bad mood. And that's just by looking at them. Nothing has been said, but you pick up on certain signals and you make some then assumption about what's going on internally in their mind. And that's what we would call implicit mentalizing. So that capacity to take in information and make some assumption about what's going on inside the person's mind. Explicit mentalizing is what we do a lot of in therapy, which is to slow it down and say, now what do you think I'm thinking at this moment? Or I have this sense that you're having this reaction to that thing I just said. Can you spell that out? We talk a lot about in MBT, holding mind in mind, which means that you pay attention. You hold with a certain level of care and awareness what's going on in someone else's mind and what's going on in their experience. So we're seeking to strengthen good mentalizing and working towards interrupting bad mentalizing when it happens. Good mentalizing, the way that you know that you're in a sort of good mentalizing space, is that what you're thinking and feeling is pretty balanced and moderate. There's not black and white thinking, all or none. There's a balance between thinking about yourself and thinking about other people. You can take perspectives on a situation. There's not usually real absolute certainty. The other way that we know someone has got some good mentalizing is that they feel like they've got a pretty rich internal life. So the experience that a lot of folks with BPD talk about in terms of feeling empty or that they don't know who they are is something that we would say comes out of being in not good mentalizing or losing their capacity to be mentalizing with themselves. So just to reiterate, I'm going to say it in a slightly different way. The ultimate aim in DBT, again, is one of skills, generalization, shaping good, solid, effective behaviors, and then throwing in this other more complicated piece, which is around acceptance and dialectical thinking, which you know, sort of restating what that means. It's being able to accept that life includes a lot of emotional pain and tragedy. Things happen that we cannot control, but we can control how it is that we respond to them. At the bottom line, we're looking to have folks go from having a very sort of chaotic experience of themselves with lots of destructive behaviors to moving towards a more skillful, effective approach to emotions, to themselves, to others, to life. MBT is seeking, again, to stabilize mentalizing. And out of this stabilizing mentalizing, we see that folks then develop more adequate and constructive ways to express emotions. Their relationships stabilize. They feel a more coherent sense of self, and they're able to form and maintain positive, stable relationships. So what actually happens in the therapy? So I said both have one, each week, one group and one individual. I'll go through group because it's a little bit, I think, more straightforward in terms of what happens, and then we'll go to the individual. But both treatments really view both group and individual as vital, that you really can't do the treatment, at least for the first year or so, without both. This is the case for DBT, again, because the skills are so... There are so many pieces to the skills that what Marcia was finding when she was developing the treatment, that it was virtually impossible to teach everything that needed to be taught within the individual work, that you just couldn't do that and attend to what was coming up for folks every week in terms of relationship difficulties or work difficulties that they needed to address. So both the individual and the groups in DBT are very structured, and they follow a similar pattern, bit like Catholic Mass, no matter where you are. It's sort of the same lockstep thing that you'll see. So the groups start each week with a mindfulness exercise, and then the group leader will hit some lecture points. What I really was struck by when I was first learning DBT is that even in the skills manual, the level of respect, I think, is inherent. The skills manual is written as a teacher's manual. So it has the lecture points that the group leader will run, the discussion points, the questions that you're going to ask, the homework assignments. It's all right there, and it's given. That's what everybody uses. It's not that the teacher has their manual and the clients have their manual. Everybody's working from the same book. So the group leader will go through the lecture points. And the idea is that you can have a generalized discussion about something like interpersonal effectiveness in a way that's a little bit less emotionally laden, because it's not specific to a particular problem that you might be dealing with, and that their learning will be more likely to be effective in that way. So you'll go through a general discussion about a particular skill, and then there will be homework from the previous week that folks will review, and this is where you get kind of like workshopping of the skills. You can bring in, this is a skill that I tried, and here's how it went. And again, these skills are taught in order. So it's not that you're learning interpersonal effectiveness this week because that's what you really need, because that's the most important thing that you're dealing with. It's because that's where we are in the group. And that way you're learning these skills sort of out of the emotional fire as much as possible. And the thought is that they'll be more easily learned that way. They run, the way that the DBT is set up is it runs about a year. MBT is a similar, it's about a year depending on the program, might be 18 months. MBT starts with what it calls an MBTI group. So the first 6 weeks are similarly very psychoeducation-based. They're almost all, the entire time is spent in lecture and discussion. So the group leader is communicating certain things about the diagnosis, particular emotions, attachment disorders, and then there's some discussion around it. And again, information is given very matter-of-factly, non-judgmentally. So some of the stuff that we'll talk about in the MBTI group is, what does it look like to have a preoccupied or anxious attachment style? What does it mean to constantly need lots and lots of reassurance in order to feel settled and secure in a relationship? Or what does it mean to have an avoidant or a dismissive attachment style? Meaning that the way that you manage your fear of intimacy in relationships is actually to stay distant. And these things are all just sort of, again, laid out matter-of-factly, and we talk about, sort of given this information, what do people think about how their attachment style is. But again, it's out of the heat of the moment of any particular relationship difficulty that we're talking about. So that first part of MBT will run anywhere from 6 to 12 weeks, depending on the program, and then the group will move into what's called an implicit MBT group. And this group is very different than from DBT. And this is where the two treatments really diverge. There is a structure to it in the sense that everyone in the group will come in with a clear area in their life where they're struggling and they'd like the group's help with mentalizing. For example, someone might come in and say, my boss told me this week that I need help controlling my temper. And the group will go about trying to sort out what the heck is going on with this. And the group leader is very active. But we're not teaching skills. We aren't problem solving. What we're doing is trying to help everyone in the group practice moving from perhaps all or none, like your boss is a jerk and you shouldn't listen to him, or of course you've got a temper problem because we see it in group, moving from very strong all or none ways of thinking about things to more nuanced and balanced perspective taking. And the group, the reason, so for DBT, the idea was that we can't teach all these skills in the individual work. In MBT, the idea was we need a lot of different perspectives on someone, and someone needs a whole lot of different perspectives coming in order to practice being in and out of good and bad mentalizing. The other thing that we get to do in groups is focus on when we see particular relationship patterns come up, within the group to focus on them. So those are the groups. So now for you to think about individual therapy and what actually happens in an individual therapy. So in DBT, again, it's very structured. When people start a DBT treatment, they start doing a diary card, which means every single day they make note of what skills they've used, what their emotional life was like for the day, meaning what feelings did they feel and how strongly did they feel them, and then what target behaviors did they engage in or have urges around. And target behaviors are those behaviors in which the client wants to stop doing, so eliminate from their life. And if there's any target behavior that's occurred in the week, that then sets the stage for what happens in the rest of the individual therapy session. So the DBT individual therapy session starts out with reviewing the diary card, talking about target behaviors, identifying which ones have occurred, and then going into what DBT calls a chain analysis, which is a really detailed, how am I doing with time? Good, I think I'll go through with them. It's just a really detailed way of looking at all of what went into a particular behavior occurring. So very often when you're starting out working with someone, there are simple sort of reasons why. Well, I did that because of this. And that's it, end of story. But if you actually back up and look at the 24 hours leading up to that particular behavior, it becomes so obvious why that particular behavior occurred. Again, viewing that destructive behavior in the light of an attempt to solve a problem, that once you see all the things going on, that seemed like the most likely way of solving the problem, given the skills that the person has at hand. So a chain analysis could then potentially take much of the individual session, and what you're looking at is figuring out where vulnerability factors are, where specific triggers, and where are those places where the client has some skills deficits, and then you would do some problem solving to sort out what you might do differently and what skills then from group you might apply. So for example, if one of the target behaviors is getting drunk and having a one-night stand, you would then go back and say, okay, well, let's start with the day before. What was that day like? And get a general sense for what that day was like. The person then might say, well, I didn't sleep well that night, the night before. I woke up, I was running late, so I skipped breakfast, drank an extra cup of coffee, got to work, was given tasks that weren't mine, that were my coworkers. I didn't stand up for myself. Feeling really lousy, went to lunch, overate. Then my boss said something to me, and I snapped at my boss. My boss reprimanded me. I didn't sat at my desk just feeling really lousy and stupid and like nothing ever was going to work out for me. So then I thought I might try and make myself feel better. So I went and looked on Facebook and looked at everybody else who's having these happy, wonderful lives that I'll never have. I reach out to a friend to try and get together after work. She wasn't available, so I just decided to go to the bar. And then I met the bar, and then I met someone, and I went home. So from a DBT perspective, there's so much there in terms of, and I, of course, went through that in all of, like, 30 seconds, right? But you'd spend the session really sort of getting the flavor for all of what each of those things felt like. And then you can go back and say, all right, so if we were to start with not sleeping well the night before, that might be some place where there's some sleep hygiene work, and this would come under emotion regulation. Skipping breakfast and having caffeine, that might also come under emotion regulation. Not standing up for, you know, with your boss in terms of getting extra tasks piled on top of you. We might talk about interpersonal effectiveness skills. And the goal is not to sort of say you did that wrong, you should have done this, but really to hold with respect that those are things that the person can't actually manage in any other way at the moment, but that we as DBT therapists are going to try and sort out how to manage those things in more effective ways so that as the day unfolds, it's less and less likely that the end of the day will end up in a bar. So hold that chain analysis in mind as I switch over now to say, well, what happens in an MBT individual therapy? Because one of the things that folks who initially are introduced to MBT will think of it as a way of it being very different from DBT is that we don't focus on behaviors. And it's true that the bulk of what we do is less interested in behaviors, but that's not to say that we wouldn't. If someone came in and said, oh, I did that thing that I didn't want to do, say, okay, let's figure out how that happened and how we might avoid that the next time. But the way that we would go through the chain analysis would be a little bit differently. The sessions are not particularly framed around a diary card. Well, they're not framed around a diary card at all. The person will come in and will sort of say, how was your week? What came up for you? And that rather than attempting to teach skills, what we're trying to do as an MBT therapist is first and foremost, and this is sort of the bulk of it initially, is to get a real accurate reflection back to the client of what their experience is so that they have the experience of feeling felt. And it's in that experience of feeling really truly understood that the perspective might start to shift. As well as, from the therapist's perspective, there are particular techniques that we use to kind of shift things along. But our main goal is not to go through a chain analysis so that the person at the end can say, well, now I have all these particular places that I can engage in different behaviors or more effective behaviors. Our goal in going through a chain analysis is to help the person have a way of thinking about and being in their experience. And that process is what's seen as the major agent of change or the mechanism of change. So that thing that we're doing in the therapy room is thought to be the thing that causes the change. But where we would focus, so if we think about this exact same chain analysis, where we might focus, so rather than, you know, if the person says, well, my coworker gave me a whole bunch of work that wasn't mine and of course I just did it, where the DBT therapist might say, hang on a second, let's talk about how you might actually say no to your coworker. We as an MBT therapist would say, hang on a second, why is that of course? Of course you wouldn't stand up to your coworker. What is it that's going on that you got to that place of saying of course? Or of course I snapped at my boss. Because that of course I did this or of course I did that, we would say was non-mentalizing, and we'd want to shift it to, well, I did that because, or I didn't do this other thing because. So it's the sorting out of why a person says something like, well, of course I did this, or of course I did that. The other place that we would be listening for when we're walking through someone's day is those moments where they have experiences in relationships where they feel let down or dismissed or disappointed, in that our view of things is that those are the moments that are the most aversive experiences in life, really, is to be dismissed by someone that we're looking for support. And again, rather than trying to sort out with them how they might skillfully respond to the experience of being disappointed that the friend blew them off, it would be helping them have a more nuanced, broader, and richer perspective on that experience of feeling let down and figuring out. It's not even really a figuring out, so when I say that figuring out, it makes it sound too skills-based. It's actually creating a space to have what feels unbearable become bearable, and that's by being in the situation with someone, your therapist, who's actively trying to sort out what your life and your experience of your life is. So in terms of the overall treatment flow, again, I feel like I keep saying, because it's true, DBT is really behavior-driven. A particular session is organized around whether a target behavior occurred, and then if you've got a bunch of different behaviors that are occurring, you decide which thing to talk about based on the hierarchy of targets. So any behaviors that are life-threatening come first. Behaviors then that get in the way of therapy, so being late to session, not paying for your sessions, canceling sessions, those are yelling at your therapist in a way in which they can't stay grounded and connected to you. Those are all things that then are addressed. And then we get to quality of life interfering behaviors, so not managing your finances, not getting to work, those sorts of things. The flow of MBT can look a bit like it's all over the place, because we're not, again, so focused on these are the skills deficits and this is what we've got to build up. It's sort of like anything that you bring in is the juice that we work with in terms of, are you thinking about whatever it is that we're talking about from a more nuanced and mentalizing place, or are you thinking about it from a more all or none or black or white place? That said, the way in which we intervene as a MBT therapist is to think about the poles. So is a person exclusively talking about themselves? We might actually then shift to trying to sort out how other people in their life are fitting into whatever it is that they're talking about. Are we only thinking about things and we're not actually feeling them? Or are we only feeling them and we need to bring in some thoughts? Are we solely focused on what's going on inside ourselves and we're not at all focused on the environment? Or are we only focused on the environment and not anything internally? So that sort of will guide as an MBT therapist where you are. But, you know, I think in a DBT treatment, if you're looking at a snapshot or a videotape from session 3 to 4 months in to 6 months in or a year in, you'll have a real sense of where you are in terms of life-threatening behavior, therapy, interfering behavior, quality of life, interfering behavior. Whereas an MBT, you could really be talking about anything. The only way you'd have a sense of where they are, meaning is the person early on in treatment or is the person sort of towards the very end of treatment, will be how much of that session is in a mentalized mode, meaning it's more thoughtful and reflective and it seems like it has a whole bunch of feelings and thoughts and beliefs and it's just a very rich tapestry, or is it more extreme? The other, piece that I think about in terms of, I have it on the treatment flow slide for those of you that have slides, but I don't know that it necessarily fits there, is that DBT does a lot of contracting work early on. So there's a lot of commitment that you get from the person engaging in the treatment around. The most basic commitment is that you will take suicide off the table. One of the things Marcia says an awful lot is this treatment won't work if you're not here, if you're dead. So there's some, the expectation is that you will agree for the next year to have suicide completely off the table and that you will be working very, very hard not to engage in the target behaviors, whatever those are that you agree on with your therapist. MBT does not expect anyone to make any contracts. There really aren't contracts. And it's not so much that all behaviors are fine, but there's just this expectation that one cannot actually agree to take something off the table. Similarly with DBT, if you miss 4 sessions of group, you can get kicked out. MBT is much more relaxed in terms of whether or not people are sort of coming or going or in the treatment. So in terms of, again, the mechanisms of change, for DBT it's about skills development and that overall, this is worked towards in terms of balancing, validating where the patient's at and working towards changing their behaviors. MBT sees the mechanism of change being one in which the person is accurately seen and they have the experience of being seen accurately by the therapist, and that's really what creates this process of change. I'm sure there are maybe more, lots and lots more things I can say about how they're similar or different, but I'm noticing the time. So I want to just shift to, because this is a question I often get, given that I do both, is how I make the decision to do DBT versus MBT. And I will say it's a tough call in the sense that I think there are not many places in the world where someone would be able to say, well, I have this choice. Can I do this or should I do this? The reality is I believe very strongly that both treatments are very good. Both treatments address ultimately the same phenomenon, the same experience. And they get at the end result of changing that experience in different ways, but they're both really effective. one of the places that I started doing MBT even before I really realized I was doing it is when I had folks who came in for DBT, but they were in what's called pre-treatment phase. They couldn't actually make a commitment to change behaviors. They weren't ready to take suicide off the table. Then you got to do something else. Or people who really just get turned off by the skills that they feel like they're overly simplistic. They don't want to do the homework. They don't like the way that the groups are sort of taught. Those are folks that I do MBT with instead. But the reality is most people self-select. So most people will come in asking for DBT or asking for MBT, and I've never had the experience of sort of saying, you know, I really think you should do the other. Sometimes you'll hear that people will say if someone is engaging in lots of really chaotic and destructive behavior, they should have DBT over MBT. I don't know that that's necessarily the case, given that MBT was actually designed for people who are engaging in lots of destructive behaviors, but it can be very scary for a therapist to sort of feel like they're not actively addressing behaviors with behaviors. So if it's about the therapist's anxiety, then you might sort of say, okay, go DBT versus MBT. But again, MBT was developed for the same problems. The other thing people will say is sometimes if it's more about the relationship, somebody should be referred to MBT versus DBT. And again, I think that's a misunderstanding. DBT also addresses the relationship. It just addresses it in a different way. So the one place that I can make a clear distinction is if someone is struggling with BPD, but they really don't have a lot of destructive behaviors, but instead are dealing with a lot of emotional pain and really struggling in relationships, but again, not from a behavioral perspective, that might be a place that I think more MBT. And similarly, if someone doesn't have a lot of really awful behaviors that they want to change, but they really feel a disconnect from a sense of self or like they don't know who they are, that may be a time that I think I'm going to go with my MBT hat versus my DBT hat. So let me pause there because I'm noticing the time.
Yeah, thank you so much. This was really fantastic. And speaking of mentalizing, you read my mind because my first question was, how do you decide which treatment is best for a given patient? So that was such an interesting talk and so informative and really, really interesting to hear your thoughts on kind of how that decision is made and how people self-select and what can be better and what kind of circumstances. Another kind of question that came to me during your talk was for clinicians like you who are trained in DBT and MBT, what are your thoughts on integrating both treatments or kind of pulling from each based on the specific needs of a given patient over the course of someone's treatment? Do you think that there's a certain amount of that that can and often does happen or should happen?
Yeah, and so here's the piece I didn't say at the beginning because I think it could get very confusing, but the MBT folks will say that if you're doing a very good treatment, whatever it is, then you are, in effect, helping people to mentalize, and that you can do a mentalizing DBT treatment, but you want to pay attention to how it is that you're talking about the skills, and are you talking about it in a rote way, or are you talking about it in a very thoughtful way? And I think really good DBT therapists are, of course, doing it in a very thoughtful way, but there's a way of also talking about skills where you're not. You're just sort of saying, well, go do this skill, or, oh, go do that skill. I mean, even if you think about the distress tolerance skills, which the first set of them are around engaging in alternate behaviors. Like if you're feeling like the worst you've ever felt and someone says, well, have you thought about taking a shower? It's like, what? Taking a shower is not going to help me with this pain. Mm-hmm. But if you're first trying to understand all of what's leading to that pain, then that sort of suggestion about taking a shower might actually come from a mentalizing place. So the ways that I see them integrated and being, I forget where I was, where both Peter and Anthony and Marsha were at, they both said very strongly, you want to learn each treatment in its pure form before you start integrating it, because you can start integrating it in a way in which you lose any of the real power of it. But that said, again, with someone who is not willing to take on skills and change, if I start in an MBT model, it may be that 4 months down the line I start talking to them about real skills and behaviors and how you might use distress tolerance. Coming at it in the other way, it may be that you're in a place with someone, and certainly I've had this where I've worked with people for a year, and they've learned all the skills. They know the skills left, right, up, down, and center, and yet there are particular areas of their life where they're not able to implement them. And thinking about what reinforces it and what punishes it and what environmental changes you might do just sort of falls flat. That might be a place where I would then move into a more mentalizing mode and let the DBT skills go for a little bit.
Okay. Really interesting. Thank you. One last question that comes to me, and I do want to check before I ask this. Perry, I haven't gotten any emails about questions from the audience. Are there any that have come in? Oh, I don't hear Perry, so I'll go ahead and ask this one.
None came in.
Okay, no problem. So last question I had was for treatment-seeking individuals, what are some of the factors that you might recommend that they consider when considering seeking out a DBT versus an MBT treatment program? Kind of helpful and not helpful things to consider.
Yeah, so I think that it comes down, like if you are in an area where you have the opportunity to interview DBT therapists and MBT therapists, that you interview both, and it really, does it feel like to be in the room with the particular therapist, that we know just from the get-go that there's a chemistry and a personality fit, and within three sessions you should feel like there's a fit or there isn't. For people who are, and I'm one of these, who like structure, that sort of managing anxiety, it gets soothed by structure, that might be someone who feels more comfortable initially in DBT because it's very structured. There's just very sort of clear what's going to happen in individual, what's going to happen in group, what are you going to be your homework assignments every week. And then there are other people who find structure to be really limiting and makes their anxiety go through the roof. And in that case, it might be that MBT is a better fit.
Okay. Great. This was a fantastic talk and just so interesting. I think we all learned a lot. And we just really appreciate your time. So
thank you
so much for doing this.
Yes, thank you to both of you. It was excellent. I think there were no questions because everything was so clear.
Oh, thank you. It really was.
Good. Yeah.
Good. Thank you.
Great. Okay. Thank you
so much.
Bye. Have a great night. Okay.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.